Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for TWiT specials is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Hi, everybody. It's time for our annual audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It helps us understand our audience better, know what you like and don't like, how you listen to the show. It also helps us tell advertisers what kind of people listen. But I promise you, your feedback is always kept personally anonymous. All you have to do is visit twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. It'll just take a few minutes and it'll help us make TWiT even better. We really appreciate your support and any help you can give us. twit.tv/survey.
Hi, I'm Tanya Hall with TWiT TV, This Week in Tech. We're here in San Francisco at TechCrunch 9th Annual Crunchy Awards. Lots of people having a good time getting ready to start the Crunchy Awards. There's going to be a lot of categories. We're really excited about some of the possible winners. We'll soon to find out. We're going to interview guests, attendees, and at the end, we're going to talk to some of the winners. What's your name?
Chris Stoikos.
And what is your company?
Dollar Beard Club.
Dollar Beard Club. Okay. Well, that makes a lot of sense. How long have you guys been in business?
We've been in business 7 months now. It's been a pretty crazy journey from start to where we're at. But we've been a rapidly growing startup, and we're a disruptive one at that. It's kind of flipping around the way that we look at companies and the way that we think they can do things.
You said the Dollar Shave Club was, to kind of explain your business, your arch nemesis, your competitor. They've been around, I want to say, 2011, something like that?
Or 4 years or so, yep.
And what is it that you do differently, if it's not so obvious?
It is just that obvious. We look to recruit, big boys, men to the club. We like guys that grow their beards, be able to express their facial hair, and be able to take care of it. We want, put in nice-smelling beard oils, nice-smelling beard waxes. You got to get your mustache away from your mouth when you're eating. And just to be able to take care of, men's hygiene on a whole new level with a way that you're allowed to just be who you want to be. We don't want to shave for our boss or, some women make us shave and that sort of thing. But I think when you can just, you don't have to do anything to have a beard. You have to do something to not have a beard. And when you don't waste 15 minutes a day in the mirror 5 days a week, that's, a couple hours back you're getting every month. And you can learn a new language if you just stop shaving. And it's like, whoa, where do you get that kind of crazy correlation? But I think once people just start to step into their real selves, let their beards explode out of their face, you'll find that you just evolve into a very, very newer version of the person you already are.
All right, beards exploding out of faces. Well, that's kind of an interesting idea. Okay, so you're 7 months.
Yeah.
Did you have some funding to begin with? Did you just have this idea? I mean, how are you getting your business produced and promoted?
The best way that I see that every business should expand and start off, and that's with organic virality stemming from a video. We bootstrapped this company with a bunch of my friends from childhood and guys that I've met along our journey, but we basically took in a very small seed round from a strategic investor that's helped us act as a catapulting platform for getting the videos out there. But basically, it's just all been through the media that we've created. We have a very loyal following. I think that when a clean-shaven guy passes a clean-shaven guy in the street, you don't look at each other and gave a head nod, but when a bearded dude passes a bearded dude, there's this unprecedented underlying brotherhood. It's like this camaraderie. So I think that that's translated across all of our fans and the people that belong to Dollar Beard Club, and that stickiness allows the word to spread, like I said, very organically.
So you're using social media, I take it, with your videos. I mean, do you have a formal strategy, and who's helping you with that?
Formal strategy, standard growth acquisition stuff through Facebook, Google, different media buying strategies. Again, we keep going back to our content. We're filming our fourth video later this week that we're coming out with. And in terms of who's helping us with this, we have our advisors and different guys in our pool that we go with. But I'm all about, building things and breaking things. And you got to break more than you build. So every mistake that you make, it's not considered a mistake as long as you learn from it. You don't know how to do something, you go tap into Google, YouTube, and your phone book. And I think when you do that, you can actually bring stuff into your own skill set, then it really allows you to take things to another level and accomplish new things that people haven't already done.
So we have one of our favorite external guests and hosts, Alex Wilhelm with TechCrunch. Well, actually, formerly with TechCrunch. How long has it been now?
It's been about 35 days. Very, very different days, but very good days all the same.
And your new company, your new title?
Editor-in-Chief at Mattermark.
All right. What do you hope to see kind of in the financial and reporting space here from the Crunchies?
You know, I'm really excited because last Friday there was a massive correction in the public markets, and so we've seen things really fall apart. So what changes in the camber and discussion today that's different than what would have been a month ago? So people are scared in the public market, but now we're here celebrating it. So how does that impact, you know, enthusiasm and so forth? It's going to be fun.
So you've been a part of this, I'm assuming, for as long as you – how long were you with TechCrunch?
I was there about 2.5 years. So last year I was on stage and nervous. Now I'm in the audience just hanging out. It's lovely.
Were you part of the voting in the past?
I was not officially last time around. I would have been this time, but then I quit. And they were like, no. So, you know, going around.
How are you going to report on? Are you going to be live tweeting or Snapchatting or anything?
You know, actually, it's fun tonight. I'm going to be hanging out, watching everybody. And then afterwards, I'm going to take all the winners to the bar, buy them all a bunch of whiskey, and just see what happens.
What was the big takeaway last year from the event? You were actually with TechCrunch. You were an employee at TechCrunch. You were a reporter at TechCrunch. What was the biggest takeaway?
Don't hire TJ Miller to host the Crunchies.
Oh, really? Why is that?
Oh, he was the host last year, and then it went very poorly. This year, I think that we bumped up another notch. What they have, sorry. So we, it's hard not to say. But it's a beautiful venue. I think the production's amazing, and it's packed, and everyone looks way more handsome than I do. So it's going to be a good night.
You're so funny. You know, we need to have you back on Twit. It's been a while. It's probably a couple weeks, right?
It's been a whole 10 days.
10 days. It's just not long enough, right?
No. It was. I love being on Twit. It's one of those shows that like, you show up like, yeah, and by then you want to kill yourself. Because after 2.5 hours, I'm kidding. It's one of the best shoots in video because you have enough time to actually say what you want to say and actually formulate opinions and arguments. Many shoots are like 5 minutes long and you have no chance to really dig in. But Twit's unique in the video world because you really can go broad. And that's why I show up. That's why I love it. And if you don't watch Twit, you're making a mistake. So get on that stuff.
We're here with
Mike Butcher from TechCrunch, the editor at large.
I do follow you. I pretty much stalk you and everything that you do on social media. Are you all right with that?
No, totally fine. I get this sometimes. People come up to me and say, Mike, I follow you on Twitter. I go, great. Join the party.
So this is number 9, you guys. Congratulations. You've got a great turnout. I've spoke to a lot of people here already who are really excited. They think that what you're doing is great because you're actually recognizing people that are doing something in the industry.
It's a big celebration of the industry.
What do you hope is different this year than the previous 8 years?
Well, what we've done this year is we've slimmed down the awards so that it's slightly shorter. It's going to be hopefully even more entertaining than it is normally, and it's very much the pièce de résistance. It's the crème de la crème of the industry, and we want to make it kind of like the Oscars for the technology industry.
I think it is like the Oscars. I mean, people are dressed here like they're at the Oscars, and the sealed envelopes, the you know, nobody knows who's the winner.
Super secret stuff.
What goes into, you know, I asked this question earlier, what actually goes into actually deciding who's going to win? I mean, is that really challenging for you? Do you have a criteria?
Absolutely. But the point about this is that we've now effectively come up with an academy-style system, where 100 of the most influential people in technology vote on these awards. So this is very much for the community, by the community. So it's entirely very, very above board, and independent third-party lawyers check all the votes. So it's very, very, it really is the best of the best.
You interview people all across the globe, some really interesting people in the tech industry. Who's somebody you've interviewed recently who did something or said something that really surprised you?
Well, you know, for TechCrunch, I travel very extensively, and I'm super excited when I meet somebody, for instance, in Cairo, who's come up with a product aimed at startups, and that turned out to be Instabug, who we covered recently, and they built that company right in the middle of the Arab Spring and the revolution in Egypt. All the way up to, we were in Davos recently, and we interviewed Kevin Spacey about his activities in online media. The great thing is there's such a broad breadth of technology, activity going on that really you can go from, you know, literally from one end of the planet to the other.
What is the next big thing that's going to happen in our business? What's happening? What do you see happening next? I mean, Robert Scoble's talking about, you know, VR, and that's getting ready to change everything that we do. I'm not going to have to put on makeup anymore. Excited about that. What do you see as next?
Well, I think there's going to be a lot of blood on the walls on in terms of VR because there's so many people trying so many different things. But that said, absolutely, augmented reality, I think, is actually going to be even bigger than VR. And then, of course, you've got all the stuff that Apple's working on, Project Titan, the automotive technologies, and Internet of Things is an enormous space. So certainly technology, really, has never been more exciting now than previously, yeah.
So are you on Snapchat? I follow you on Twitter. We talked about Twitter. Are you on Snapchat?
I am on Snapchat. You can follow me on The Mike Butcher. It's all completely off the record, of course.
Although I don't know. I think there's ways you can actually keep that on the record now, right?
Yes, well, absolutely. I'm not even revealing how that works.
Ben Pardo, I've been following you since your Mashable days. How many years ago was that?
That was... I started out in 2008 at Mashable, so it's been a lifetime to me, at least.
It has been a lifetime. You're all over the space. You're doing all kinds of interesting things. Do you attend the Crunchies every year?
Not every year, but the last 2 years. So what I've noticed is like the production values keep on going up. Like this is a really good produced event this year out of all the other years I've seen.
Now, what is it that you're doing today? I mentioned your kind of entry, I think, into the social media tech industry as certainly a well-known, prominent figure. What is it? What are you doing now?
So in addition to my investing through my venture fund and my book Captivology, which released last year, I launched three things in the last 10 days. Launched a podcast called Oversubscribed with Jason L. Baptiste, the author of The Ultralight Startup. I launched the Tech Caucus, which is a newsletter where I poll the leaders of the tech industry anonymously to find out what's going on. And then I launched a class on captivation marketing on Skillshare, which is going to be expanded across the country.
There's going to be a quiz later because that's a mouthful.
It's a mouthful, I know.
It's a total mouthful. You said you've been here for the last 2 years. I mean, this is a big production. It's certainly, you know, I'm kind of wondering, you see people in jeans and a jacket. You see, you know, people that are going to the opera. What is it that you hope you'll get out of it for everything that you're doing?
For here, it's always for me, the people, is I get to see and catch up with a lot of old friends, media people, CEOs, but it's also I get to meet some new people, some interesting and fascinating entrepreneurs, some new friends I wouldn't meet otherwise, and, you know, just generally have fun and celebrate the good things that happen because of technology, because of startups, because we're here to do good in the world.
We're here to do good in the world. That's pretty profound. You mentioned you had a book come out not too long ago. What is that book again?
It's called Captivology. It goes through the science and psychology of attention, why we pay attention to certain people and products, but most of all, how to utilize that science to captivate and capture the attention of others, whether you're a startup or you're a big tech company or you're just an individual trying to get the attention of fans or for your music or whatever it might be.
What startups are you seeing that actually kind of swing in that arena that do that type of thing?
That help capture attention?
Correct.
Or I just joined the advisory board for Rebel Mouse, and I think they're doing a fantastic job of figuring out how content is distributed across the web, because it used to be it was all on a single homepage, but now you got it on Facebook, Snapchat, everywhere else. So how do you take and manage that in a world where content's so distributed? Because I used to post on my personal website. Now it's on Medium, now it's on Inc., now it's on TechCrunch. Where does it all go?
Snapchat. I think it's Snapchat right now, right? So everybody's snapping.
It's fun. Friend Jason Calacanis was saying he finally figured out what Snapchat's for, which is showing the inside at VIP events.
Is he here?
I don't know. I don't know if he's here. It might not be a thing he's at. But you know what? Snapchat is just a fascinating product, and I need to use it more.
It's the Crunchies.
What, were you here last year?
No, I haven't been for a few years. I was a judge on the first one or two of these things, and it was a lot of fun. But I haven't been for a while.
So what brought you back?
I don't know. I heard there's something fun. There's free food, I heard.
Free food? I don't even think there was alcohol last year.
So, this is a celebration of the technology of the year, and that's what brought me back, you know.
So I
got to celebrate, bring out the augmented reality prototypes and, you know, the LED lights, stuff like that.
I saw your interview on that. You're really passionate about this technology that you're wearing here. Tell us about it.
This is a prototype. What's going to be shown off at TED is a new version of this, and it's mind-blowing. It's a paradigm shift. It's a really important product category. Magic Leap, which is in this category, got $1.3 billion of investment so far without shipping a product, without having a customer. Think about that one for a second. So the investors know this is really, really important in coming big. HoloLens is up for an award tonight at the Crunchies as best new technology achievement. I think it's going to win. So HoloLens is probably the third of these in this new category. Meta is the second, and Magic Leap is the top. But we're going to see. This whole space will not play out for 3 years. You know, 3 years from now, we're going to be getting our first consumer glasses that we're going to wear and see this world get augmented, because, you know, we're going to look through glasses, not as dorky as this one, but we're going to see things augment when we see a logo on the wall, or even you. I'm visiting Sephora in a week at their R&D. They're already building virtual cosmetics. Think about that one. You're going to buy virtual cosmetics so that people who are wearing augmented reality glasses are going to see that you look better. So you can dress up as Kiss if you want.
So this technology that you're wearing, it's Magic Leap?
No, this is Meta.
Meta. Okay.
Prototype of Meta. This is 4 years old already. So this whole industry is evolving very quickly. And if you look forward, it's about 3 years away from being consumer. Enterprises are already using this. Caterpillar's using it to train for their mechanics to see how to fix the machines that they make, right? And on. We could talk about that. But this year it's for enterprises. Next year it's for prosumers. The year after it's going to go consumer.
You said in your online rant that this was a different, like this took it beyond that. Why is this the next level?
This is a paradigm shift. So it's, you know, in my life we've seen the PC come along, the Apple II. We've seen, and a few before that, but that's really where my life started. I was in junior high when the Apple II came out. We've seen the smartphone come along. We saw the Macintosh come along. The GUIs were a paradigm shift, and the smartphone certainly was a paradigm shift. We haven't seen a paradigm shift since the smartphone, right? And it'll be about a decade. So this is a really important new category coming at us that is going to dramatically change our culture in ways that I'm still exploring with people. I'm writing a book on this called Beyond.
My name is Jordan Crook. I'm a senior writer at TechCrunch.
Senior writer at TechCrunch, okay. And this is your ninth annual event. I've heard a lot of the TechCrunch people talk about, you know, how you don't take yourself too seriously. This seems pretty serious to me.
Yeah, I mean, we try to be more accessible. We want to be mainstream. We want everyone to feel like they have access to tech. And what better way to do that than by honoring the people who are changing our lives every day, which is the tech startups.
What makes this year different than it was last year? You know, Robert Scoble was just here talking about he's missed it for a few years. Something brought him back. What is it that you're trying to do different to get people interested in the awards and excited about what you're doing here?
Yeah, well, in the past we've had up to 20 awards before. This time we have just 12. So we've really pared it down to what matters most. So we're getting it to be a quicker show. It should run for about an hour and a half instead of 3 hours, 3.5 hours. Nobody wants to sit here for that long, right? Another thing is we're just trying to be more inclusive. So like I said, we want this to appeal to everyone. If you're at home and you know nothing about tech, you know nothing about VCs, or you don't know who Mark Andreessen or Robert Scoble is, you should still be able to tune into our live stream and really enjoy yourself tonight watching the show. It should be entertaining as well as informative. And we're also introducing a new award called Include Diversity, which is meant to highlight individuals or organizations that are advancing diversity in the tech world, something that's near and dear to TechCrunch's heart, and we're really excited to be shining a light on it today.
That is pretty I like the fact that you're doing that. That actually is something that's near and dear to, I think, everyone in this industry's heart. You know, again, it's a decade of doing this. What do you see from the outcome? Like, what are you seeing happen to the startups, the award winners that come out of this event? What do they go on and do? Like, what do they take from this?
Well, you know, I think that what happens is a lot of people see the tech world as kind of this 1%, this group of, you know, maybe entitled billionaires who are building tech companies. And in reality, it takes a lot of hard work, blood, sweat, and tears that go into building these companies that change our lives and that we use every single day. And what we're trying to do is simply say, you know, thank you. Thank you for what you've given us. Thank you for the technology that you've built, for the money that you've put into the startups we love, and for leading companies that are, like I said, changing the way that we live and communicate and work.
I know that you, again, you know, I keep quoting somebody on your staff or your team that says, we don't take this too seriously. I see people here in really gallant looking outfits. I see people in jeans. It's typical for our industry, right?
Yeah.
But what I think is important is that you are recognizing the tech industry. You're encouraging them. You're supporting them. But how do you go about making the decision about who's a winner? Who wins in categories? I mean, what is your criteria?
Yeah, I think that's an excellent question. I'm really glad you asked it. So for the first time this year, we're doing things very differently. Nominations come in through the internet. We put it out on TechCrunch.com, make your nominations. We take five of those, the five with the most nominations, and then we have something new called the Crunchies Board, which is very similar to what the Academy does with the Oscars. They're sent a ballot in the mail by an independent law firm. Those ballots are then tabulated, and the winners are kept confidential until the night of the show. So I don't even know who the winners are. But it's chosen by TechCrunch editorial staff, as well as really well-regarded members of the tech community, from VCs to founders, advisors, CEOs, et cetera.
Do you offer any help to any of the startups, any of the businesses who are here, who have attended, or who win? I mean, what is the after? What is the post-Crunchies like?
I think that for any startup, it's about having that acclaim and having that. It's just like for if you see an actress who has just won, Best Actress, that comes up in her title every time, right? And that's what we want the Crunchies to be. We want to put our stamp on these companies and these people and let people know that, you know, we feel like they deserve to be to have that award and to let that be a part of their title as a company. No, we don't offer extra help. We're not funding these companies. We're not advising them. But obviously, if you want a Crunchy, you know, just like anything else that TechCrunch does with Disrupt or our mini meetups, you're part of the TechCrunch family, even if you're nominated, right? And we want you to know that obviously you can reach out to us for coverage and, you know, and we've given you that stamp of, you know, you're a Crunchy winner.
How responsible do you feel for some of the award winners? I mean, you're reporters, right? You're reporting the news. You're talking about what's happening. Do you feel a level of responsibility to see their success going forward?
Obviously, whenever we bring someone kind of into that TechCrunch fold, or you're a winner, or you've been in our Disrupt battlefield, we obviously want you to succeed. But as editorial staff, we're obviously not going to do anything above and beyond to make you succeed, right? So I think it's up to the startups to pave their own way and to find their own success. But yes, obviously, we're very happy whenever we give a Crunchy to a company that goes on to IPO at billions of dollars.
What's the biggest surprise you've had over the 9 years in maybe an award winner or an attendee, whether they won or not, but you saw them go on to do something? Did anything really just surprise you guys and was like, wow, we never expected that to happen?
You know, that's really hard to say. There have been so many winners, so many nominees in our past. I will say that one of my favorite moments at a Crunchies Awards was Michael Arrington did a surprise interview with Yuri Milner, who is a billionaire investor at DST Global, and he's world-renowned for not doing interviews, and somehow we snuck one out of him at the Crunchies, which I thought was a really fun moment.
What do you hope happens here tonight? Is there anybody that we should know that's here? I mean, do we have, you know, somebody peering around the corner that's going to surprise us?
Well, I'm really, really excited to see Chelsea Peretti. She's our host for the evening. She's one of my favorite comedians personally, and she's Jonah Peretti's sister, so she has a really interesting connection to the tech world in a lot of ways. And we have some amazing presenters tonight, too. You know, we've got Roelof Botha, we've got Bastian Lemon, and the list goes on and on. Mary Meeker is presenting for Best Over all startup. So it's some really hard-hitting tech celebs, and we're really excited to have them here.
The awards just ended, and we've got really honored to actually be in the presence of David Clore, 500 Startups.
Hello, how you doing tonight?
So I said your name, but you are David Clore.
Last time I checked, yes.
And I know you do 500 Startups. What else do you do?
I try and get on stage for 60 seconds at a time at the Crunchies.
You were pretty funny up there. So you really did have a TV show that got canceled. That's a real.
Really did have a reality TV show that got canceled.
Is it on Netflix? Can I Hulu it? Or
no, there's one episode available. We shot six, but we sucked so bad they canceled us after the first episode.
Oh, you know. Well, hey.
The ratings thing. They're so picky, you know.
But you have been very successful with 500 Startups. It's a really amazing. Talk about that. How long? When did you launch 500 Startups?
About 6 years ago, maybe five and a half, 6 years ago.
And what is 500 Startups?
We're a venture capital fund. We do a lot of other things than just invest, but we run an accelerator program. We do a lot of community education and events and conferences, and we have folks all over the world. and we try and make money.
And what are some of the companies that you've helped that we might be familiar with?
Well, I don't know about help, but we've invested in companies like Credit Karma and Twilio and a company called Grab Taxi out of Southeast Asia that's doing really well. I guess also a few others that are probably a little younger, but you might be hearing about in a few more years. Talkdesk, Intercom, and Maven are some of our companies that went through our accelerator programs.
How do you decide what kind of companies that you're going to invest in or are advised?
Big wheel, we spin it around, and then we throw some dice on it. Or darts, we play darts.
Darts is good, that's good. Rock, paper, scissors?
Yeah, sometimes. You know, we try and find smart people, and hopefully they're working on a product that we think would be useful, and we try and give them a little bit of money.
And what are some of the biggest challenges you have when it comes to investing and getting the startups going and helping them along, kind of getting them out of the nest?
I think a lot of the challenges are just finding things that people actually want to buy and want to purchase and being able to scale up the businesses. But there's 1,000 challenges that founders go through and trying to figure out what to build, how to market, how to grow the company, how to raise capital. So there's a lot of tough stories that people have to figure out when they're building a company.
What are some of your global challenges? You know, I mean, obviously here in the Bay Area, it's one thing, but you've got, you said you're global, you're working everywhere. What are global challenges that present to you?
We have people in about 18 or 19 other countries, and about a third of our investments are outside the U.S. In some places, there's lots of capital available, but most places we invest internationally are still kind of challenging. There's not as many VCs as there are in the Valley. There's certainly not as many angels and people who've gone through startups before. So a lot of times we find smart people around the world, but we still need to help make sure that they can get capital downstream and also that they can get to a functional business and, you know, make a profit someday, we hope.
What are your biggest growth markets geographically? I mean, what are some countries or areas you think are actually, you're really seeing a lot of potential?
Right now, probably Southeast Asia is the most active area where we're seeing a lot of investment outside the U.S. Also in India, which has really changed quite a bit since maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And then we also do investing in other places like Latin America and Middle East, and just starting to invest in Africa. So those are big markets, but still a lot of things that are just getting started in those countries.
So let's talk about the reality show.
Okay. What do you want to know?
The inside scoop.
No.
The inside scoop is we spent a lot of time trying to get a show together, getting the right like people. We had some great people producing the show. Unfortunately, we did not find an audience, and we'll see. Maybe it'll surface again on a different network, but it was just like startups, a lot of things didn't work, and in this case, that one did not work.
You gotta take a gamble, you gotta roll the dice or play rock, paper, scissors at some point.
That's right. Anyway, you throw some stuff on the wall and see what sticks. In this case, we didn't quite stick.
Well, you know, we love following you. If somebody wants to follow you, find out more about how to get in front of you with their startup or learn more about 500 Startups, how do they do that?
You can check us out at 500startups.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Dave McClure. And hopefully we might give you some money someday.
We are talking to
Manny Fernandez of Dream Funded.
All right. And what is it you do?
We allow people to invest in pre-IPO companies. So it's equity crowdfunding, if you will. So allowing everyday people one day soon to be able to invest. And we're doing quite well.
So anybody can invest. What brought you to the Crunchies?
Well, it's a great networking opportunity to meet many others as well as find other investment opportunities. As an angel, I'm always looking for new investment opportunities.
Oh, there you go. You found anybody?
Well, not yet, but we're still always looking. You always have the meeting, and you follow up, and you see how it takes place. It's not.
You can tell me who is it. Nobody can.
I wish I could get some Uber shares. Any employees out there in Uber or Slack that's looking to sell, we're buying. So let that people know that. Come to DreamFunder.com.
How long have you guys been around?
A year and a half.
A year and a half. So in the year and a half, how much have you grown?
How much have we grown? We have under $5 million under management, 5,200 plus accredited investors, been written and covered in all the major publications, including Forbes and Inc. magazine, just recently on CNBC, Squawk Box. But the most important one is your media company that we're being covered on right now.
Aw, Twit TV, Leo Laporte, right?
Absolutely.
What are some of the startups that companies that you founded that we might have heard of or that you've invested in?
We funded either through acquiring employee shares or primary investments, TaskRabbit, Rebel Systems. The biggest one is Dropbox. So those are pretty well-known companies, if you will.
What kind of companies or startups are you looking for? Any specific type of startup, or are you just broad open?
Oh, in the internet and software space, primarily those that come through a good incubator. We co-invest. We are not the lead investor at this stage. So essentially, if there's a Tim Draper or a top-tier incubator that's already invested, we'll personally invest and then allow other members to co-invest. This started off as an extension of our angel group, SF Angels, where I'm the founder. And so what we want to do is allow others to co-invest with us to provide more investment opportunities to them, as well as perhaps move some of the investment capital out of Silicon Valley to other parts. Like our first investment out of Silicon Valley was in Colorado in a company called Notion. That was a Techstar graduate. Most recently, last month, I invested in a virtual reality company in Hawaii. And then in November, a crowdfunding site called Investor. It was one of the leaders in Finland. So we're now investing in other parts of the world, which is exciting because of our membership base wants this to happen.
There you go. What are some of the biggest challenges that startups are having that that you see that you're having to help? Do you coach them at all? Do you give them, you know, advice?
And then usually they have that support group already. And I think one of the challenges for many is knowing how to raise money. Some are in the network and some are fortunate. Those that may have some network but they still need outside money, they come to Dream Funded. So I think it's a great time for startups to get an opportunity where they never had a shot to do it now, because it's the first time in 83 years. Every day people will be able to invest in May. So it gives a lot of opportunities to people that didn't fit in the Y Combinator or the 500 startups category, if you will.
We've got a writer and entrepreneur here at the Crunchies. What is your name?
My name is Zach Klemp.
And you're a writer for TechCrunch?
Yeah, I write for TechCrunch and Forbes about the automotive industry.
And what is, you said you're also an entrepreneur. What is that? What are you doing?
Sure. So I'm the CEO of Selly Automotive. What we do, we provide used car dealerships with easy-to-use software to manage all their customers. So right now there's a lot of disruption going on in the automotive industry. There's companies like BP, Carvana popping up, but there's still 120,000 used car dealerships. They're still using pen and paper to keep track of their customers.
So what are you doing that's going to innovate the automotive small mom-and-pop shop, auto shop?
So we give them affordable, easy-to-use technology to manage the internet customer. You know, Deloitte, they reported your average consumer, they're spending 10 hours shopping online before they set foot in a showroom. So we're giving them the tools they need to manage these new internet-savvy customers.
How does that work for the end consumer? What's the advantage? Is it really a B2B proposition, so it's for the business, or is it also for a consumer to help them know better about the car shopping experience?
So the way we help the consumer, we streamline the sales process. Everyone knows it takes a long time to shop for a car, and what we do, we streamline that process so it's faster. You know, the salesperson is more efficient. So that's how we help the consumer element.
So how is the sales process more efficient for the dealer?
Right. For the dealership, we give them tools like a driver's license scanner to easily add a customer into their inventory. We give them a VIN scanner so they could quickly appraise a vehicle. So the customer isn't waiting in the showroom 30, 40 minutes. It could instantly be done.
All right. How are you marketing your product? You're here at the event, obviously. Are you trying to find some capital?
Yeah, we're definitely looking for capital, but also we're at all the dealership shows. I write for TechCrunch, Forbes, very active in the industry.
We've got one of our winners here. What's your name?
I'm Cal Henderson with Slack.
Cal Henderson with Slack. Congratulations. I saw you win. I actually had you on my notes. I was going to grab you. So congratulations on the big win. What was the category?
Well, it was actually my co-founder, Stuart, won Founder of the Year.
Founder of the Year. And what is it that you do with Slack?
Myself, I'm the CTO.
CTO. And what does Slack do? What is Slack? For those people who don't know what Slack is.
Slack makes messaging software for teams.
Teams. I know we've had a lot of people on our network that are big fans of what you do. When did you guys launch?
Just about 2 years ago now.
Yeah. 2 years. And in that time span, what kind of user base do you have now?
We have about 2 million daily active users now.
What have you learned from the time of launch to now that was completely different that you didn't expect about your product? And how have you, what was the big surprise between now?
Oh, I think the big surprise is that it was actually as successful as it's been. I mean, we knew that we were building a product for that would work for teams like us, but the way it's been adopted in the last couple of years has been amazing.
What's the next step? I mean, is it a bigger team? Is it a different kind of user experience? What's the next step for Slack?
I think more of the same. That you know, we want more people to know about Slack and to be using Slack to help make their working lives simpler, more pleasant, more productive.
What has been your biggest challenge from the standpoint of getting people to use your product?
It's a tool for teams, so you have to get a whole team to use it at once for it to really make sense. So that can be difficult.
How do you market it?
Mostly Slack's marketing has been word of mouth up to this point.
I'm hearing a lot of people say word of mouth marketing, and is that because there's really, you know, an understanding of what the strategy is, or is it because you're so busy, like, actually working on the product? Why is that?
No, I think it's that if you make a product that people really love, then they'll tell people about it.
How do you feel? That's a pretty cool award. I keep getting people to... Is it heavy? I mean...
Kind of substantial.
What are we going to see from Slack in the next year?
Bigger and better. Making everybody's lives simpler.
Come on, I won't tell anybody. What's the next big launch?
I'm afraid it's a secret.
What is your name?
My name is Seth Sternberg.
And what's your company?
It's called Honor.
And what is it you guys do?
Honor helps our parents remain in their homes as they age with joy, comfort, and grace.
And how is that? How is that? It sounds pretty simple. I mean, like, why wouldn't everybody want that? What exactly do you guys do?
Well, so 90% of the elderly want to remain in their homes as they age. But as you get a little bit older and it's hard to get out of bed or get food, you can't stay in your own home unless someone comes to help you. And so Honor is completely remaking what's called home care, private duty home care, top to bottom to make it a really great experience for the elderly.
So how does the actual, is it an app that's on your phone? Like, how does it actually work?
Yeah, people can download our app in the App Store. They can go to our website, joinhonor.com. They can call our 800 number, and they can say, hey, my mom needs help, or my dad needs help, or I need help. And then we'll come to their home, we'll do an assessment, figure out how much help they need and what kind. And then we regularly visit them at their home.
What is, as far as kind of the elder care industry and taking care of, you know, baby boomers' parents as we all age, unfortunately, how big is the tech industry or the need for technology in that space?
Yeah, so, you know, when we started looking at the elderly industry, it turns out there's been very, very little innovation. And so when we saw that, we said, this is terrible. Like, we're at the same place now as we were 20 years ago when my grandmother started to get old and needed help. So the tech industry has not done a great job of really helping the elderly and helping their families, and we're trying to change that. We're trying to modernize and really bring better product to helping folks age in their homes.
When did you guys launch?
We launched about 7 months ago in the San Francisco Bay Area, and then we launched about 2 months ago in Los Angeles.
And how has your user base grown? Like, where are you at now?
So it's grown really quickly. We actually believe that we're the largest elder care system in the San Francisco Bay Area, and LA is growing really quickly as well.
So how are you going about gaining new subscribers? Do you have a marketing strategy, billboards, direct marketing? Are you Snapchatting? Like, how are you getting people?
It's not Snapchat. You know, about 50% of our customers are the family of the elderly, right? So their kids or their nieces and nephews. And then about 50% are the elderly, either buying Honor for their spouse or for themselves. And we find folks from all over, online, inside the medical system. We partner with the medical system. So there's really a lot of stuff that we do to help people become aware of Honor.
How are you verified? I think probably one of the biggest questions that somebody would have about somebody they care about, especially as your parents age, is making sure that you're a trusted source. You're somebody that we can really count on. You know, there's always... It talks even just about, you know, can I trust the car I'm getting in? Can I trust the rideshare program? This is something much more serious, talking about taking care of somebody's family. You've got medicine involved and just all kinds of other factors. How do you guys get rated or verified?
Yeah, so we do a lot. We actually only accept 5% of the care professionals who apply to be on honor. So it's very, very hard to become an honor care professional. And we do everything from very deep criminal, misdemeanor, felony background screens through the driving record, drug testing, all of that on kind of the security side. And then we actually test people very specifically for skills. We even actually hand people a cell phone with a what's called a CNA exam, a certified nursing assistant's exam, on that phone. And we say, hey, there's a CNA exam on here. Find it and take it. In addition to doing things like personality tests and scenario-based interviewing.
How are you determining where you need to launch next? You launched here. You're talking about LA area, Los Angeles area. What's your launch strategy?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. There's a saying that healthcare is local. And since building Honor, it's blown my mind just how unique the healthcare system is market to market. Even Los Angeles and San Francisco are totally different beasts. So we look at both the healthcare system and the area and where the need is greatest. And then we also look at the demographics, how many elderly are there, what support services do they currently have, and would they benefit most from Honor moving into their market?
7 months isn't a long time, but you guys seem to be growing pretty rapidly. Then what is the next step? Like what, you know, I know it's hard to kind of like say, okay, this is, we got to get this done, this, that done. What is the next step for your company?
You know, there's been unbelievably little innovation around how we care for the elderly, and we have more product coming that I think will just really surprise people around fundamental health. Like how do we keep people not just happy, but also happy and healthy in their homes? As well as some other neat stuff I can't talk about yet, but really innovating around how to keep let people stay in their home with joy, comfort, and grace.
Hadi Partovi from Codes.org.
That's one of the twins, that is, right? Your twin brother's around here somewhere. Code.org, what category did you win in?
Social impact.
And that's a pretty pretty fancy award. That's the first time I've actually seen it up close. What do you think?
It's pretty cool. I've been practicing the pose to try to do the same thing.
Oh, is it heavy?
It's kind of heavy. I haven't dropped it yet to test, but it's heavier than I thought.
Congratulations. We follow what you do at Twit TV. We're really impressed with your work. Why do you think you won the award today?
You know, I think mainly because the entire country has rallied behind the idea that every school should teach computer science. You know, what we do is helping kids, and nobody's against it. Everybody thinks it's a good idea. I think teaching computer science in schools is an idea whose time has come, and, you know, we've been very lucky to be at the right place at the right time.
We've certainly talked about you a lot on Twit TV. We're big fans, and Aaliyah LaPorte's a fan. What is it that you hope to do next? Like, what's the next level for Code.org?
You know, we've reached the point where Americans broadly think this is a good idea, but 75% of our schools don't teach computer science, and we're, at this point, training teachers in America's schools to bring this field into the schools. And we're the largest teacher training operation in computer science. We've gotten 25% of the schools down, 75% to go, so that's our next few years.
Why did you start this? What made you decide to start Code.org?
You know, I was an immigrant to this country, but I learned to code on my own. And as an immigrant, it opened so many doors for me, and I'm living the American dream as a tech entrepreneur. And the idea that the majority of kids growing up in this country don't have the same exposure, the same opportunity, just seems like something we should fix, that our school system should at least offer kids the opportunity to have the same opportunity that I did when I came here.
I noticed it was really sweet. You were celebrating with your family after the big win, and, you know, it's I guess, probably really rewarding to show your kids that you're actually doing something for good. What do your kids think about the big award?
They're all big Code.org fans themselves. You know, more importantly, they are learning. Their school teaches computer science using our stuff, so they love being in the classroom, and then daddy's, you know, thing comes on, and that's like the whole classroom is doing it. It's kind of cool for them.
And how do people find out about what you're doing, get involved in what you're doing, or learning more about it?
At www.code.org.
So let's say your name.
Alice Steinglass.
And you are?
I run the product, marketing, design, and engineering teams at Code.org.
So, big win. We were just joking about how cool that actually award is. And you're sporting this like really fancy outfit, beautiful necklace. It kind of goes with, I think.
Thank you. Yeah, definitely you need a good necklace for a crunchy. I think that's a key to the crunchy.
How are you marketing what you're doing? You guys have taken off. You've done so much. We actually talked about you guys. We had an interview with you on our show with the Screensavers, talking about just really how popular your organization has become. It's no wonder you won tonight. What is your marketing strategy? How do you go about getting schools to sign up, teachers involved?
Well, you know, I think the interesting thing is that you don't have to market that much because parents want this. In a recent survey, we found that 9 out of 10 parents want their students to have the opportunity to learn computer science. So the trick is less about creating a need where there isn't, you know, there is a desire. Everybody knows that their kids need to learn tech in this day and age. But helping schools, helping teachers figure out how to do that, how to offer it in the classrooms. So a lot of what we're doing is things like professional development for teachers. We've had over 20,000 teachers take classes to learn how to teach computer science. And that's part of just helping really implement it into the classroom so it can become real.
Are you able to, once somebody signs up, once they get excited about it, are you able to retain the same numbers? Are you having, you know, to worry about that? Or is it just an acquisition of getting people to open up and start doing it for the first time?
I mean, I think like anything, you have a funnel, right? So we have, you know, over 50 million hours of code this year where people just tried an hour of code. And then from that, you don't want everyone, not everyone is going to be a computer science. What we're really hoping is that everybody has the opportunity to learn what computer science is so that they can decide for themselves whether or not they want to take it. And that if they do decide to take it, it's offered in their classroom. It's offered in their schools. Most schools today don't offer computer science. So even if you want to take it, you can't. And so what we find is that by partnering with the schools, we actually do get retention because you make it part of the classroom and you make it part of the school day. The teachers will keep offering it, you know, week after week, and the students who are in those classes really get to try it more deeply.
What is your biggest global challenge? I mean, you've probably got all kinds of, you know, culture barriers, social barriers, language barriers. How are you overcoming that?
Within the U.S., I think that all of our software is translated into not every language, but, you know, tons and tons of languages. So, you know, kids can use it no matter what their native language is. But I think part of it also is that computer science is something that transitions across languages, right? No matter where you are in the world, you can learn computer science. And it's actually a great way for a student who might not, you know, speak English to be able to figure out about algorithms and how you break down problems. So I think it is actually one of those things that works really well internationally.
Are you using social media? Is that an outreach part? Is that a part of your outreach program, or is it literally grassroots and making phone calls?
I mean, of course we use social media, but honestly, I think the success of this campaign is grassroots. It's the fact that students want it. It's the fact that teachers want it. It's the fact that they're amplifying the message and they're trying to get it out there. Our biggest campaign of the year is Hour of Code, and that's not something where we do at all. It's something where lots and lots of nonprofits and even for-profit companies in the industry have all banded together to say we want this to be part of our schools and a part of our community. And during Hour of Code, we have tutorials that are created by all of these different companies so that students can try an Hour of Code with code.org, but with Tinker and with Scratch and with CodeHS and with lots and lots of solutions in the space.
What is your biggest challenge right now, and how as a tech community can we help you overcome that?
Well, I think there's a lot of challenges. I think one of the things that we really need to do is we all need to support it in our schools and be able to give the teachers the tools that they need to offer computer science. And something that, you know, whether that's financially supporting it or helping out with your school or volunteering, you know, if you have engineering skills, we're always looking for volunteers to go into classrooms and help the teachers out, because a lot of the times the teachers want to offer this in their classroom, but they don't know how, and they don't know, you know, and connecting it to a real job and a real person in tech is a great way to help make that concrete for them and help them out.
Congratulations. I love following what you guys are doing. It's very exciting. And if we want to follow you and follow your success, how do we go about doing that?
Well, you should always follow code.org. That's our Twitter handle. And you can follow me at Alice Steinglass. That's Alice and then Steinglass, Steinglass.
Lots of big winners tonight. Here's one of them. No big shocker. Congratulations, by the way. What is your name?
I'm Nick DiCarlo.
And your company?
Samsung.
And what did you win for tonight?
Best hardware for the Gear VR.
Congratulations. No big surprise, I think, you know. BB-8 was a little disappointing, I think.
BB-8. I was rooting for BB-8 myself.
Who knew? So the big exciting year. You guys are doing so much. Tell me, what you know, What is it that's really exciting you right now about your technology?
I mean, I think the biggest thing is if you saw Sundance or you see what's coming out in the next couple weeks, is so much about VR right now. And so much energy, so many cool films, so many cool games. It's just such an exciting time to be in this, in the VR space right now. And we're just happy to be part of it.
We should be interviewing this way. Like, where?
Yeah.
Where's our headset?
I know.
What?
This is the first time I ever left without a headset. First time I left the house without a headset.
So, beautiful award. I've been telling everybody they're kind of fancy. There, is it heavy? Oh. So, what's next for your gear? What's next for Samsung?
Oh man, we're just riding the roller coaster. Like, VR is going to be an exciting year. So much is happening. Like, it's gone so much faster than we expected. So many filmmakers coming in. So many amazing games. Education, like, so much momentum in the education space. So we're just kind of letting it ride, and let's see what happens.
Those are a lot of vertical markets. You're talking about gaming, education, movies. So you got entertainment, the learning experience. What's your biggest challenge right now?
I mean, like, the basics of VR is you got to try it to really believe it. And we're in, you know, several hundred Best Buys. We're going out to tons and tons of places. I think we've given more than 100,000 people a VR demo, but there's 300 million people in the U.S. So that means we've got a lot of work to do.
When are you coming out to our Twit Studios in Petaluma, California?
Ooh, Petaluma. Let's get there. I don't know where that is, but let's try it out.
It's about 45 minutes north, the Twit Studios.
Sounds wonderful.
Home of Leo Laporte.
I would love to go to Petaluma. If I could get an invite, I'm there.
How is, you know, wearing a VR, like, how is that going to, like, where do you see that application? Is it science? Is it English? Is it the entire school experience?
Sure, yeah, there's a couple of things. So you can't pass notes if you're in VR, right? So you're in there. And then if you think about, if you're learning about science or a lab course, and it's equipment that's too expensive, too dangerous for you to use, you can use it, like, in real life, but in VR. So it's basically free. You can use it as many times as you need to really get the lesson. And so it gives you lots of practice, lots of repetitions with real equipment. And actually, it's so powerful, the Department of Education has already recognized the potential of these kinds of simulations. And they're going to be doing a contest during 2016 for the best educational simulations. And so it's going to open up a huge opportunity for people to really explore the opportunity in the media.
What are some of the hardware challenges? I mean, it's very expensive, right? Like, for every student, would this be something every student would have? Or to get it in classrooms all over the world? Or are you focused on any specific geographical area?
No, it's a great question. So if you think about, I need to take a criminal science lab course. I need a DNA sequencer. I need a centrifuge. I need all this equipment. Tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of equipment, plus the material and all that. A VR device is maybe $1,000 or less. So now I can give every student that experience for $1,000 across all the students instead of all this equipment. It's an amazing productivity enhancement, because the equipment is this world-class simulation for almost no money. So the easiest example to think about is an airplane simulator. Cost several million dollars to build. That level of world-class simulation can now be done on your phone. So that kind of cost reduction is a disruptive innovation for the world. And it's just a matter of content producers producing content that can leverage that technology, and we'll all be learning in world-class airplane simulators for tiny amounts of money.
You know, it sounds like a really big undertaking to from the standpoint of content, like figuring out, you know, where you should deploy this, how you get the content. What is your biggest challenge in that space right now?
Yeah, I think that we don't want just VR for VR's sake. It has its place, like any technology. It's a technology that you don't want to just, everything's VR. That's not the case. We want people to apply it where it really adds value, and so that's spatial relations, situations where you want a lot of focus and you want people to understand like a complex sequence of events that almost has a spatial nature to it. And we think that there's a lot of opportunities there, but it's not like the world is not VR. It's just, it has its right places. I mean, I've been in the wireless industry before text messages, before camera phones, and nobody ever imagined walking and just like texting like that. So I've seen the world change, and what looks strange today is going to be super commonplace 10 years from now. And so I think about how we've changed with mobile devices. I see that potential in VR. And of course, the technology will evolve, but the world changes around it.
You say you just came back from some of the film festivals and movies, and you know, on a lighter note, Oscars are coming up. What is from the entertainment standpoint, from the movie space, what are we going to see? What kind of movies? Is it action? Is it like romance? Like where is VR really coming in?
It's all about comedy in VR. Now, we had an amazing experience at the Sundance Film Festival. So many amazing VR films, but we had a really special experience with Paul Scheer and Rob Hubel from Funny or Die that absolutely blew everybody's mind at Sundance. And, you know, new technology, whether it's Twitter or viral videos on YouTube, it's all about comedy with new technology. And so I'm advocating for more comedy in VR. Actually, we're here at the TechCrunch Crunchies. We want Chelsea Peretti in VR.
Hey, I remember there. She was great.
She would be amazing.
All right, well, thanks so much for stopping by to talk to us. I love what you guys are doing. We do have an invitation to come to the Twit Studios and talk to Leo, talk to the rest of us. We'd love to have you come up.
Let's do it. Petaluma.
Petaluma.
Woo!
Okay, everybody, it's Tanya Hall with Twit TV. We've just wrapped up the Crunchy Awards, the interviews, all the excitement. The partying is still going on. Upstairs and downstairs, lots of networking and a lot of having a good time, a lot of celebrating. It's been a lot of fun in San Francisco, but it's time to head back to Petaluma and the Twit TV studios. Thanks for tuning in.